Yeah. Uh-huh. Listen up. Yeah, I can see you're new to this. You ain't got no job. You ain't got no experience. You're entry level. You ain't got no qualifications, baby. You're entry level. You're entry level. You're entry level, baby. You're entry level. Ooh, yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Green Chef. Green Chef is the most sustainable meal kit. It's so fun and easy to try healthy new recipes at home with Green Chef. Try Green Chef today, the number one meal kit for eating well. Go to greenchef.com/brooks100 and use code brooks100 to get $100 off, including free shipping. Yo, welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. I am in Austin, Texas. We're sitting outside of my friend India's house and her... I guess this is a, what would you call it, Summer? This is a, like a...
CrossFit.
CrossFit. Gym. Yeah. She made her backyard into a CrossFit gym. This is Summer Sakula. We're done with touring. We did Iowa.
I like that you're making it a we.
We did.
Very inclusive.
Yeah. This is an inclusive podcast. Everybody's involved. We went to Iowa, and then we went to we're in Texas. We're flying back to LA right now.
That's right.
But you had never spent much time in Iowa. How did you feel?
Hadn't. I think, like you made into a semi-successful joke this week.
What was the joke?
That you asked me how the flight was, and I said...
Oh, yes. So, Summer landed... I went to Des Moines a day early to do shows. You had work, so you came in a day later. And when you landed, I was like, how's the flight? And you just go, people clapped.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, yeah.
You're like, don't you?
That's what you do when you land. You clap.
And then we were at your folks' house, and your mom said, is that bad? It was great.
Yeah. But we had a great time. We went, the shows were fun as heck. Thanks to everybody who came out. We went to the Mississippi. We went to Dubuque. We went out on the Mississippi.
Super fun town. We went to,
Dubuque. Shout out.
Yep. Davenport. Stayed in a haunted mansion.
Yeah. Renwick Mansion in Davenport. Did shows in you called it a haunted hostel.
Yeah. Well,
it was a hostel.
That's correct.
It was we stayed in a hostel, in a haunted hostel.
Y'all stayed out, late drinking, and I went to bed and tried to sleep and wasn't sure if the window shades were moving on their own or not.
Yeah, the only thing we were told, like, hey, the window shades might move. This is a house from the 1870s, and the window shades might move. So the only thing you were looking at were window shades.
I was just trying to sleep, and there were noises, and I wanted to read my book, but, you know.
I got drunk enough to where I wasn't worried about ghosts.
Yeah.
I did get up to pee at like 4:30, maybe 5 in the morning. Everyone was still up drinking.
And it was like the temperature of an ice chest. So that did not help me feel relaxed. Yeah, I did sleep in the only jacket that I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's, you know, do what you gotta do.
When we got off the Mississippi, I think, understood for the first time how much beer can be drunk without getting drunk with a person. Like, none of us were drunk, but we all each had 10 Busch Lights. So it was great.
Yeah, I think the blood alcohol level of Midwesterners is just hits a little bit different.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was surprised, maybe impressed. Equally concerned. It was like,
it was great. We got to ride on a boat. Shout out to Tyler Breitbach. It was super fun.
So fun.
But we're just doing a short intro since we're on the road. We're headed to the airport right now. The main thing we needed to do a little intro to get to was we went to the cave.
That's right.
We fucking went to the cave. We did it. And we did a little podcasting before and a little after in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to play it. It's short, and it's very real.
It is. It is.
And I think we cover everything we need to cover in what we're about to, you know, it was like investigative reporting. And I'm excited for you to hear it. And it was very real. I was nervous. I didn't like going in there. And after that, we're going to play our interview this week with Hamed Weinberg. And it's great. You're going to love that interview. And you're also going to love My first ever field reporting, live, entry level, out in the wild with Summer Sakula.
First of many, maybe.
First of many. Yeah, let's do it. Let's start. I want to go out and start getting in people's faces. This is going to turn into an investigative journalism podcast. Enjoy this episode. Ahmed Weinberg is a dude who, one of the first times you went to the improv, where I was excited for you to see like a bunch of comics that you didn't necessarily know. Ahmed went up and he's so funny. I was like, you got to do my podcast. Please, will you do it? And he said yes. So that's why he's on it. So enjoy that interview and very much enjoy the night terrors that I had after going back to Crystal Lake Cave. Okay, we're driving into Crystal Lake, driving into the cave. I'm with Summer.
Hello.
And I'm nervous. We're pulling it up that I feel like I'm in a Vice documentary and I'm going into North Korea to confront O.J. Simpson. I feel all of those things. Oh my God. Explain what you see right there, Summer.
There's a water tower with a...
No, that's a silo.
Whatever. I'm not from Iowa.
just says cave on it.
I understand.
Your voice is shaking.
Yeah. No, I was like, I get like why investigative reporters are like, they talk quiet because they're fucking nervous. All right.
This looks like just like somebody's house.
It is. It is.
Why would anybody come here?
Whew. That's what I felt like every single time someone pulled in.
We have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 cars. That person looks like they live here.
That's the cave exit right over there. You come out that door. And that's where I would put a dollar in my hand and pretend like I'd been tipped, but everyone could see that I'd placed the dollar in the hand myself.
How much were they charging at the time?
$9. So we're going to go in. We're going to figure out how much they're charging now. And I'm going to like maybe steal something, but I'm going to suss it out before I do that. Bye. Okay, we just got out of the cave, walked around, and I shook a little bit. The new price, the new admission, want to tell them, Summer?
$20.
$20.
45-minute tour.
Oh.
$20.
$20. What did you think? What were your impressions? Worse, better than you thought, same?
About the same. I just don't understand what is happening here. Think, you know, it just looks like somebody's house that they've built a tourist attraction into, and it's there's no photos of anything, so you don't, it's a good sucker move, you know.
Yeah, because they don't want you to know what's not down there. So we went in. I was a little shaky. The woman working there, I did not know, she was very young, seemed nice. I could not believe it was $20. And then walked around. They had a cool magnet that I did not steal, but I want it to, because I'm owed it. But I wanted to buy it, but I refused to give them money.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not giving them money, but I didn't steal. So I am growing up a little bit.
Congrats.
The kid, we saw a tour coming out. The kid was probably 16.
Mm-hmm.
Walked around a little bit. I was like, let's get the fuck out of here. We left. And then I built up a little courage. And I was like, let's go in. Let's talk to the kid who gives tours.
Yeah. Let's see if he's in.
So he's sitting where I had to sit, where you have to sit before you give tours. And it's just going through his head right now. And for me, it would have just been like, these fucking idiots. Like people coming in. So I walk up to him. I go, I used to give tours here. He goes, okay. That's it. Nothing. I was hoping he'd be like, can we talk? Like, I was really hoping he would be like, can we talk? He didn't say that. He said, oh, okay.
And then that's when we overheard 45 minutes.
Yeah. So then the woman's like, who's selling the ticket, she's like, 45-minute tour. And Summer goes, 45 minutes. And I look at the kid who gives tours. I go, you can blow through in about 20, right? And he just looked down. I told Summer, I was like, he's still in it too much.
He's in too deep.
He's in too deep to like understand. He needs to go to therapy and talk about what's happening in there.
What did you hate so much about this? Like, you said on our way here that you used to think about wrecking your car so you wouldn't have to go to work.
Yeah, because it's like, it's weird in there. It's just you and a woman. For me, it was an old woman who was just yelling at me to clean all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very depressing. But at the time I was, at least they had depressing music on today. Like, mm-hmm. it was like Adele or something. When I was there, it was Casey Kasem's Top 40. And it's just an awful experience. And then you take people down on the same repetitive tour over and over and over and over. And like, some of them enjoy it and you're mad at them. And the people who are mad about it, you understand, but they're mad at you.
Mm.
And it's just like a cycle of abuse.
Taking all the heat.
People come in there, they're fucking dumb. And I'm just like, so down. And you know, as soon as you saw it, you pop out of the tour. There's only one guy giving tours today. As soon as he got walked out of that thing, there was no one in there. Now there's people in there. He's probably having to take a tour down right now. Poor kid.
45 minutes.
And then I also asked him, I was like, is the lake still as big as it used to be? Joking, because it's called Crystal Lake Cave. There's not a fucking lake in there.
No way.
There's no lake in there. There's like a little puddle. There's a tiny little puddle.
Yeah, what's down there?
It's a tiny little puddle that people are upset. You're like, there's the lake. It's not a lake. Crystal Lake Cave, there's no lake in there. So I asked him, I was like, is the lake still big as it used to be? And he's like, he goes, I bet it's the same size. And I was like, no, I know, I'm joking. It fucking sucks, dude. And I was kind of hoping that I would, like, you know, I'd be like, yo, I used to give tours here. Like, if I was working and somebody came in and was like, I used to give tours here, I'd be like, do you want to go see how bad it still is?
Yeah.
But he did not seem interested in talking to me or anything.
Yep.
It was not cathartic. I didn't like it. I didn't even, I got nothing out of it. All right, let's go have lunch with my grandparents.
Applebee's.
All right, we're driving away now. I feel like a person went to like confront like an abuser or, you know, like an old bully. Like, I'm like, I need to go let them know how they made me feel. And I chickened out.
Mm-hmm.
I walked in. I said, you look great. And I left. And the bully didn't even recognize me. Like,
didn't even remember.
The
you.
Bully has doesn't. I meant nothing to the bully. And it has all the power.
Yeah, I would say you sound more angry than when we...
It was upsetting. Yeah, I walked in there. They're doing it again. They're doing it to a new kid.
He seemed okay.
He did. He seemed to like it a little bit. But that being said, I never felt safe in the gift shop. I never felt safe to say how I felt. If we ran into him out by the bathroom, which I showed you where I hung out in most of the time,
uh-huh.
That's where you feel a little, you know, there's no microphones in the bathroom. So that's probably where he's like, I don't know, man, this place sucks. Like, I hope he would have said that. I hope, I have to believe he would do that.
Well, I'm glad you didn't corner him in the bathroom.
Ugh. And then we saw people pulling in. They looked like the absolute exact people who would go to the cave. Just dumber than rocks. So stupid. Fucking idiots. I didn't have fun in there. It cleared up nothing for me. I'm a little clammy now. But man, how depressing is that gift shop? It's just like so boring, so dim. It's the middle of summer in Iowa. You're either in that gift shop or in a tunnel at all times, and it's stupid.
Yeah. I don't have any positive things to say about it, honestly.
Yeah, there's nothing positive to, like, and
is it better or worse than the Field of Dreams after having been there yesterday?
That's so much worse than the Field of Dreams. Oh, we went to the Field of Dreams yesterday too, by the way. And
I made you do that.
No, but like, you got to see, like, oh, like, you went to the Field of Dreams. It was $20 per car, and you were just like, oh, this is boring. We can leave whenever we want. That's $20 per person, and you're fucking a prisoner for 45 minutes. You are trapped underground with a kid for 45 minutes, and like, I bet it takes you 15 seconds to realize you've been fucking tricked. Like, 15 seconds when you walk down the stairs And you're like, it's got to be bigger than this. It's not. And you're probably really pissed off. Up here, summer is where I took my high school girlfriend, Chelsea, to prove to her buffaloes hadn't gone extinct. If you turn left here, there's a bunch of buffaloes.
No way.
Yeah. I mean, they're like in a pasture. They're not wild buffaloes right there. Right. But she was like not impressed to know that an animal she thought was extinct wasn't extinct anymore. I got all sorts of fucking memories coming back right now. But most of all, fuck the cave. My opinions have not changed. If anything, they have just been reinforced. And the fact that it's $20 now is nuts. And also, I'm weak, and I didn't fuck with them at all. I didn't steal, which I should have. I didn't say $20. Are you kidding me? Which I said I would. I absolutely didn't. Here's what Summer nudged me. She goes, "Oh my God, it's $20. Then I shakily took a photo of the price, hiding so she couldn't see that I was taking a photo.
You didn't stop any families on their way in.
Boy. Yeah. We should have talked to people on their way out. But, I mean, that's when we're really, you know, I'm already poking the bear just by going in there. Like, then I'm shaking it, you know. Interviewing people on the way out? Wait, you guys have microphones? Why are you interviewing people? Oh, fuck. Don't listen to my podcast about you. Wow. Okay. But I feel confident that they don't know about the podcast.
Yeah. You can probably feel confident you were not wrong.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Wow. Driving to Clinton now. Gonna eat Applebee's with my grandparents. Fuck the cave. Summer, you want to say fuck the cave?
Fuck the cave.
Yay! Yo, dudes. This week's episode is brought to you by Green Chef. You know I like nature, and I'm into the environment, and that's why I like Green Chef. It's the most sustainable meal kit out there. Green Chef offsets 100% of its direct carbon emissions and plastic packaging in every box, so you can feel great about what you're eating and how it got to your table. Green Chef lets you choose from a wide array of easy-to-follow recipes perfect for keto, paleo, and plant-powered diets, or even if you just want to eat in a more balanced way. I like Green Chef. I got home from touring just now, and there was a box at my door, and everything was still cold. And so last night, I didn't have time to go to the grocery store. So me and Summer, after getting back from Texas and Iowa, we whipped up a delicious sausage and carrot meal that was awesome. I ate it. Felt like I was in Lord of the Rings. You know, you have some sausage and carrots. It felt like very from the garden. It was exciting. I had it, and I was like, dude, we are in Middle Earth right now. How fun is this? So go to greenchef.com/Brooks100 and use code Brooks100 to get $100 off, including free shipping. That's greenchef.com/Brooks100 and use code Brooks100 to get $100 off, including free shipping. I said it twice because that's how good of a deal it is. It's incredible. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well. Feel like you're in Middle Earth. Munch it. It's delicious. Yo, welcome to this week's episode of Entry Level. I got him. He's here. He's in Los Feliz. I'm Ed Weinberg.
Hey, I'm here.
We did it. This is like the second one I've done in my apartment in like a year. And
it's nice. I used to live on Edgemont Street.
Whoa.
I just moved, but I was there forever. And we never hung out. I lived like one block away from you.
There's so many comics that we just see here. And it's just like, hey. And then we drive to West Hollywood to hang out at the Improv.
Right. We could be here if there was one good comedy club over here.
Well, they bulldozed it, and then Tent City popped up. Steve Allen Theater. Okay.
That's right.
I saw you at the Improv, like, first show back from COVID. Very funny.
Wow. Thank you,
it was,
man.
Super great.
You too.
Ahmed's a great comic. You've done a lot of late night spots, or a few.
Two.
I mean, that's more than we ever thought
we'd
do.
More than one.
I mean, you never thought you'd do one.
No.
You know?
And I still want to kill myself.
We were talking about successful people who are like, ah, miserable, and it's annoying to me. You just got back from North Carolina. How was it?
It was interesting. I did Goodnight's Comedy Club, and I was in the small room.
Right. The main room is one of the hottest, best rooms I've ever seen in anywhere.
Yeah.
And then
you go upstairs.
No offense to where you were. you just can hear the good room from it.
Yeah, you can. Lunel was downstairs. Uh-huh. Lunel sold out the whole weekend.
Lunel crushes.
Destroys. Yes. Incredible. Like, I could, the floor under me was like vibrating yes. with her success.
Yeah.
And I'm upstairs in the, it's like an attic room.
I mean.
And it was hot.
Yeah.
That was the thing about it.
I did the Raleigh Improv, which is a great club. But yeah. it seats like 500. It's very big. It's yeah. in the suburbs. And afterwards, I popped down and did a guest out of Nikki Glaser's, like, small room at Good Nights. And I was like, this is the best comedy club I've ever, like, they're both serve a different purpose. But I was like, it's like, you know, 1980s comedy club.
Good Nights.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has a timeless, like, those old, like, the comedy attic and, like.
Yeah. You're like, put in there like cattle.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's great.
And there's coffee.
Yeah.
You're like, can I get a shitty cup of coffee? They're like, absolutely. Yeah, we'd love to give you that.
That being said, I love the Raleigh Improv, and big shout out. I would love to come back.
I also don't want to shit talk Good Nights because it's an amazing club, and I was like happy to be there. Mm-hmm. It was just comic how like the upstairs room was so hot.
Yeah.
And like small. And it's kind of like not a real room. It's like a corner.
No, it's... Well, to be fair, you know, it's only been there 20 plus years, and how could they know it gets hot in North Carolina in the summer? Yeah. That's not on them. Yeah. This is one time only.
My second show, I was like, guys, my hotel room is bigger than this, and there's air conditioning.
Do you know what? Have you ever?
It's like, let's go to my hotel room.
Do you ever have to let like such a small amount of people show up? You need to let them know they don't need to feel bad for you. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, guys, this is fine. I'm okay.
Right.
Like, I know that you feel bad for me right now. This is fine for me. I'm used to bad things.
I'm so good at self-deprecating myself. And I'm like, I don't know how I would handle success, like being in the big room. Because I'm always like, well, I can riff for 3 minutes on how I'm in the small room.
Right.
Like, I can do that. And I know how to do that. And then I can go into my material. But if you're doing well, it's like, what do you riff about? Like how good the room is?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. You can't go up there and be like, oh, woof. They're like, hey, this is sold out, asshole. Like,
right. Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I'm still going to figure out something to like complain about.
Sure. Probably. No, and I can't wait to see it. Super funny stuff. But you and I, we don't really hang out that much, and I don't know that much about you, so I'm excited to have you on the podcast.
Oh, thanks,
because
dude.
You have a very interesting... Your stand-up is so good at telling people about who you are, which is very unique and, frankly, weird. It's fine.
Okay.
Just your background is, like, odd.
Yes.
In a cool way that you know how to talk about.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Wait, give people, So just tell people real quick.
Real quick.
I mean, you were Ahmed Weinberg.
Ahmed.
Oh my God.
That's okay.
It's fine.
It's fine, dude.
Okay.
See, we don't know each other. That's proof.
Now
the audience knows this is like totally real.
Yeah.
That we're just getting to know each other. Which okay. Everyone says my name wrong my whole life. So also don't feel bad. Because I had teachers in high school that said it wrong the whole year.
Well, you know, yes, like, but they're also not having you over to their house to be on the podcast. So Ahmed.
Thanks.
Where are you from? And how did you what was your first job?
My first job. Okay, so I'm from Philadelphia, and my weirdness is that...
So, okay, you know what I mean. It's just odd.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, we're weird because, like, okay, my community in Philadelphia that I come from is a Sufi Muslim community, which is Sufism, if you don't know, is like the esoteric, mystical branch of Islam.
Right.
Kind of like Kabbalah is in Judaism. I don't know what the Christian equivalent is, but... There's a lot of poetry and art and dancing.
Okay.
And I mean, the joke that I can say if I'm doing a Muslim show is like, I'm a Sufi. It's just like a Muslim who like smokes weed sometimes.
Okay.
And Muslims think that's hilarious.
Right.
Because they understand why that's funny. But it's like this community that I come from is a lot of converts who came to Islam in the 70s.
Because here's what is interesting. You, Muslim first name, Jewish last name.
Right, because my dad was raised Jewish.
Yes.
And became Muslim.
So, I mean, that's just like a cool, that creates a comic.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, I always wanted to be a comedian, so I don't know
really?
What else. Yeah, literally since, sixth grade, my friend signed me up to do the talent show.
Yeah.
And I went to a private all-boys school, and I was the only Muslim in the entire school. Mm-hmm. And I did a joke that was, my name's Ahmed Weinberg. I'm half Jewish and half Muslim. You think you've got problems? I'm at a holy war with myself.
That's your joke in sixth grade?
That was my joke, and my dad wrote it.
Okay, I was like, that's a really good joke.
That's a good joke.
I was like, that's a really good joke.
I would have zero understanding of what that joke meant okay. for the next 10 years.
I was
years.
Like, dude, you were a savant?
No, no. Okay. The jokes I wrote were about cereal.
Yeah.
And no, how you pour the milk hey, in first.
My first jokes ever were cereal characters.
Yes.
It was, what if these guys came to a party? That's... Yeah. That Honeycombs guy, he's got a problem.
Yeah, he's yeah. addicted to smack.
Yeah.
And then the Smackers guy comes, and he's yeah. addicted to honey.
Oh, my. I wish it was that well thought out.
I mean.
He was addicted to Honeycombs.
You can have that. Yeah.
I did not think about anything. I was like, well, he's got a problem. Okay, so you. Good. I'm glad to hear that your dad wrote a really great joke.
My dad wrote a joke.
And that you didn't have that joke in sixth grade because I would be jealous.
It killed. And I don't think I didn't know what it meant. I don't think anyone there knew what it meant. This was like a middle school talent show. But what I did know was when I did that joke and it killed, it felt really good.
Yeah.
And then people thought I was cool. And I was like, oh, this is my lane.
Yeah.
You know,
that's like, awesome.
From a young age, I felt that way.
That's cool. Yeah. I realized I wanted to do stand up in like fourth grade. So I would wow. write jokes and then I would lie and say I heard him on the radio.
Wait, you would pretend that you didn't write the jokes?
I would tell somebody. I've talked about I'd be like, I heard this joke on Comedy Central. And I'd tell them my joke. And if they didn't laugh, I'd go, I didn't like it either. It was just a way not to have to take
yeah,
credit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
if they liked it, I'd go, I actually wrote that joke.
That's smart.
It's so fucking sad.
I still do that. I do that at the improv.
Yeah.
If a joke bombs, I'm like, I stole that from Carlos Mencia or whatever. Someone who's not doing it anymore.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That's fun. Okay, mm-hmm. So you're... Growing up in Philly,
mm-hmm.
all boys school,
mm-hmm.
Muslim. Is it a no? You're the only Muslim in the school.
The only Muslim at the school, yeah. So I mean, I'm white. If I mean they can't tell, but mm-hmm. I didn't have a problem fitting in because I didn't like stand out. You know, I just had a weird name, but I was like socially inept. Like I could make myself like the funny guy,
yeah.
you know, and nobody really like. I didn't receive any sort of like, oh, you're Muslim, you're like not welcome here.
Or yeah, that'd be crazy. But I mean, I'm sure it happens.
It happens. Yeah. Yeah. Because our school, I think when I went there, it was like 100% white.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were trying to diversify the school. And this was like, I was like dipping their toes in because I'm like a white guy who's Muslim. They're like, okay, we'll start there.
Yeah.
You know, like he looks safe, but he's Muslim.
Yeah.
And then like a bunch of black students came and then those were really my friends because everyone else was really rich.
Yep.
And so it was like there was the black table in the cafeteria and I sat there and I like fit in there because, you know. Everyone else was like members of the cricket club and
yeah, the real dividing line is money.
100%.
Yes. That's yes. You got the money, you can come hang out over here.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That's crazy. Okay, so that's cool. You're growing up in Philly mm-hmm. in the 90s. Sounds fun.
It was, yeah. I had a good childhood. I grew up in this weird community and our mosque in the Philly mosque in the Muslim scene was known as the Jewish mosque. Funny enough, because there were so many converts
okay.
from Judaism.
And like, how did that happen? Like, how was that like a thing?
Just you know? The 70s yeah. were happening. Like, it was just, I don't know what it was about the 70s. Just people were in a different, like, people had a lot of pubes. People were experimenting with different things. Like,
yeah.
people were leaving, like, their parents and that whole structure of thought and trying to find something else.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people that was psychedelics. And then for a lot of people in our community, it was psychedelics and then, you know, spirituality and then, you know, Islam. So
so I've just been like, you know, looking into like Judaism and it's, I don't know much, but I'm like, it seems pretty mellow compared to Catholicism where I come
mm-hmm.
from. Seems like less angry. You know, a little more like, hey, you know, we talk or whatever. And so I was like, that seems kind of okay. So, like, what is the pull to Islam from Judaism?
I mean, yeah, Jews and Muslims are so similar. And then, like, I think the esoteric like coolness of Sufism really brought a lot of people in who were like spiritual and hippie, and then they were like, but I want to have like a, I want to believe in God and have that life also. So this is kind of a you know, a combination of those things. But Islam is also,
and I want to make my dad mad.
Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah, a lot of people probably pissed off their parents who were in this community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I would piss off my parents if I probably became a strict Catholic or something. So that would be like the equivalent.
You go, Ahmed, Peter,
Weinberg. Yeah. Christian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you grew up in Philly. Mm-hmm. You find out in sixth grade you like comedy. Did you make like a, because I made like a time frame when I needed to start doing stand up for real. Like I said, when I was 17, I needed to start doing it. Did you have that or no?
No, but I kind of just knew like, okay, I would do it every year at the talent show.
Oh, okay. So you had a
once a year, okay. I would do this thing. And then when I graduated high school, I did my first open mic at Helium, which is still there.
Yeah.
Which is a great comedy club.
It's like you're very fortunate to have that be your home club.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I would do well at my school talent show, mm-hmm. and then the Helium open mic was great. I did well there. Still doing that same joke, by the way.
Well, you got a hit.
It was like, yeah, it was like my first lesson was like stick to the hits, basically.
Right.
Because I would try to write new shit, and I like it wouldn't do well.
Yeah, you know, I'm at a war with myself. Anyway, you know when the soggy bits of the Frosted Flake?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
We thought you were a genius.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or like, sports suck. And they're like, we like sports. And I was like, fuck, all right.
Fuck the Eagles. What are you doing?
Yeah. Go back to the one we don't understand.
Yeah.
That sounds smart.
Yeah, your insecurities. Talk about, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So you're doing that. What do you do for jobs? I mean, this is like loosely a jobs podcast. What is the jobs that you can pick up in Philly at this time growing up then?
When I was really young, there was this guy in our community, Muhammad Abraham, and he would do like odd jobs for people in our community. Like he would go and like install an air conditioner or paint the apartment or clear the poison ivy out of their yard.
Okay.
And so I would go around with him. He like hired me to be his assistant. So it was like Muhammad and Ahmed, and we would just go and do random work.
You guys should have fun radio commercials.
Yeah.
I mean, you're missing out if you didn't make a couple.
The best was like when we would go and work at people's houses who weren't in our community, and he was a black man, so they would be like, oh, your name's Muhammad. Okay, that makes sense. And then he'd be like, yeah, and this is Ahmed. And I was just this little pudgy redhead, like awkward kid who was like, yeah, I'll go clear that poison ivy over there. And just like, it was so confusing to people, I remember. Even back then, they were like,
especially like Philly people, you know, just like, wait, what?
Yeah. It was an interesting job. But that was a lot. I painted a lot of apartments. That was what I did primarily. Which,
I mean, that sounds like if you like your boss, which sounds like you did, pretty rad.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah.
We would smoke fucking menthol cigarettes. And
how old were you smoking cigarettes with this guy?
When I was like, 15, 16, just driving around, listening to the Quran, smoking cigarettes. Yeah.
You listen to the Quran?
Oh, yeah, a lot.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. There's, like, amazing recordings of the Quran. That's, like, a big thing is the recitation is very beautiful, so.
So, like, I would if somebody was like, you want to put on the Bible? I'd be like, what the fuck are you talking?
Well, it would be the equivalent of, like, listening to a preacher, maybe, you know?
So the Quran. You got it. I'm uneducated.
Yeah. What?
Like, the Quran is not just a book.
It's a book. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But you listen to a reading of, but like a passionate reading of the book.
Well, it's just in Arabic. Like the Quran is recited out loud as part of the prayers. Like that's like a big, every time you're praying, you're reciting parts of the Quran. So, and you're doing it out loud for some of the prayers.
Okay.
So there's the imam who leads the prayer, he's reciting the Quran out loud, and it's very beautiful if you ever listen to it. So
I got to check it out because I just can't think. Like, the Bible is real dry.
Yeah. Well, English is an ugly language, too.
It just doesn't sound
Like, if I put the Bible on, I am falling asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't speak Arabic, so I wouldn't know. I only knew what a few of the surahs.
Okay.
Those are the, you know, prayers. I only knew what a few of them really meant. And the rest of it, I mean, it's just a, it's a musical language when people are reciting it. So we would just drive around listening to that. I mean, we would listen to other shit. We would listen to Stevie Wonder. Okay. We would listen to music too.
Wait, okay. I just watched this thing. This is a total side tangent, but it's about Philly.
Yeah, yeah.
I did not know about Boys to Men and how fucking huge they were.
They're from Philly?
They're from Philly.
I didn't know
okay,
that.
Yeah. I guess they weren't crossing over. But there's this good documentary on Netflix where Boys to Men, like, at one point just had like a year of number one hits. So anyway, I was like, were you around for that?
Oh yeah. No, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah. Okay.
I was very sheltered. I wasn't really listening to music very much, like, in my household.
Okay.
It was like, my parents were very strict when I was younger. They've loosened up completely, especially with my sister, who's younger than me. But when I was a kid, like, you know, we couldn't watch TV really unless it was, you know, Mr. Rogers. They were cool with that. Or there was like no music allowed. My mom let me listen to Cat Stevens because he converted to Islam. So she was like, this guy's fine. He's probably on the right track.
Okay.
But like rock and roll was like the devil, you know, and stuff like that. I wasn't until we had the internet and I could illegally download music. Mm-hmm. I didn't listen to much music.
I mean,
so
that's kind of an incubator that would probably make for, you know, a unique perspective, like, because you're just stuck in your own, you know, what were you doing for fun?
I mean, I had friends who had cable and we would go and I would show up and be like, we're watching cable all day. And they'd be like, don't you want to play or do something? I'm like, no, I don't have TV, so I need to watch Nickelodeon and like feel normal and like see that smiling bubble face and like we would just play video games that I wasn't allowed to play.
Okay.
So when I was out of my house, I was like ingesting all that shit. But when I was home, I was really into drawing, like cartooning. I was into reading comic books and I was really into like Tintin and stuff like that.
Okay.
I was really into like that stuff as a kid.
So you're rolling around with Muhammad and you guys are painting, you're ripping cigs, listening to the Koran, classic Philly stuff. Do you have your talent show once a year all through high school too?
I did do it. Maybe I did it like twice in high school. Maybe I didn't do it every year, but I did do it. Yeah.
So
a couple times.
What was the plan after high school?
I wanted to do stand-up so bad that I was like, I don't want to go to college.
Okay.
I want to go to New York.
It doesn't sound like your parents are going to love this.
No, they didn't. Because they didn't graduate, so they were like, you know, we're paying all this money for you to go to private school.
Yeah.
It's putting us in debt. You have to go to college. That's why we're doing this. So it was, I had to go somewhere. So I went to the University of Vermont.
Oh, dude, that's a great, isn't that in Burlington?
Mm-hmm.
I fucking love Burlington.
Yeah,
have you done their comedy club?
I have, yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a great club.
It's like the fucking best.
Those two, they started the Vermont Comedy Club.
Are you talking about the owners?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Natalie or Nathan, I don't want to say their names wrong.
They're great.
Nathan.
It's okay.
Yeah. Okay.
They rock.
Anyway, shout out.
Yeah.
But they had the Vermont Comedy Club, but it wasn't a physical space. Mm-hmm. They would just book shows.
That's so cool.
And so when I was up there, I did a couple shows. The thing was, when I did comedy in high school, it was easy. And then Helium was easy. Mm-hmm. And then Vermont, I killed. So in my head, I'm like, what am I doing? I'm a genius.
Yeah.
I should be in New York, like, killing it.
Yeah, right. I mean, because what is nice about those markets is you have real crowds coming to open mics who are excited to watch open mics.
Especially in Vermont. No one has seen comedy before.
Dude, Iowa open mics, where I started, were fucking killer. They were incredible.
It's insane how much better they are than LA or New York.
I mean, LA, I think I did 3 open mics in LA because I moved here after Chicago and I was like, these do not help me. These make me doubt myself.
You were past it.
I wasn't really past it, like, but I knew it, they were doing more harm than good
for your mental health.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm just going to hang and try to get booked on shows.
Yeah.
Because like, it's shocking how hard open mics are in New York and LA.
Oh yeah. Because when I was in Vermont, I did 2 years and then I did an internship in New York City after my sophomore year and I did a bunch of open mics in New York And I was like, oh, I fucking suck.
It's tough. In New York is better for open mics than LA, I feel like.
Probably, and, yeah.
I mean, it's just like out here is just so, at least you don't have to drive there. You don't have to sit in traffic for 2 hours to bomb.
Yeah.
You can just train around and drink. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but you're in Burlington. I really like Burlington. I think my joke about it that works only in Burlington is it's a city that my aunt would make in Sim City.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like a bunch of yoga studios, ice cream shops, and four black people.
There was, I do a joke up there where I'm like, yeah, and when I went to UVM, there was like this homeless guy on campus and he was screaming about socialism and then he almost became the president.
That's solid.
Because I remember Bernie Sanders being around.
Yeah.
And he was just a guy and everyone loved him, but nobody, like, he wasn't famous in any way.
He rocks so hard.
He's the best. Yeah. It's like, that's like, I mean, God, when you go up there now, like, Bernie, I mean, he brought that town alive.
I love Burlington. I have only been up there in the winter. I can't imagine how fun it is in the summer. Okay.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Are you doing anything for money up there, or what are you going to school for?
I went to business school just because I didn't know what to do.
You're going to make some ice cream with Ben and Jerry?
I was just like, I have to go to college. I guess I'll study business. Like, I just had
insane.
No idea.
It's fucking insane that at 17, they're like, what do you want to do for 45 more years? And you're like, what?
Dude, and business school at UVM, it was a bunch of kids from New Jersey going up there to party.
Yeah.
And then they were like, oh, we'll just do business because that'll make daddy happy. Mm-hmm. And I remember those classes. I remember this feeling of like, nobody here knows what they want to do. And this woman came in who I think owned like a honey company to talk to our class.
Very, very Burlington.
She was like very successful.
Yeah.
Like she asked our class, what do you want to do? Like, what are your interests? Like, that's where you really want to start when you're creating a business. Like, what are your interests?
Right.
And nobody had an answer. It was like so sad that everyone was like, my interests are, I want to make money. And she was like, okay, that's good. But like,
how
do you like coffee? Like, what do you like? And nobody knew. And I remember sitting around being like, I have an interest. Like,
right.
I don't want to be here. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not my spot. So then I switched over to film studies, which up there was film theory.
Okay.
Which was a lot of just hanging out, watching movies.
Yeah.
But yeah, my job, I was doing a work study where I was a security guard at the museum on campus.
Okay. What type of museum?
It was just like a college campus museum that had like, there was a Native American wing and then there was like an American, it was just like a regular.
Yeah, it was like, hey, we got, you know, here are, cause at the University of Iowa, there was like a museum, but it was basically like, here are like the four fields that we teach here and we got some stuff about them.
Right. I don't know why they had this museum. Like, nobody came in.
Yeah.
And it was just a job where you sat on a chair and made sure nobody was, like, eating while they were there. But nobody came in, so you would just fall asleep.
Yeah.
And then the boss would walk around and make sure you weren't asleep. And I was like, but there's no, like, let me sleep
here.
What are
we doing?
Please. Yeah.
He's like, well, don't roll up your sleeping bag. Don't bring the sleeping bag. You're pushing it in my face.
Yeah, you have a tent.
Yeah.
That's probably a bit much.
Okay, so you're doing that. You're cruising. You study film theory. What the fuck does that mean? Like, just like,
film theory is like watching queer cinema, like reading articles written by straight white men about what that cinema means.
Okay.
And like, it was like, honestly, a huge waste of money. Like, it was just one cool class I took was the films of Stephen King, because the guy who ran the class, he was friends with Stephen King and he was a film like theorist, and he would write these books about the Shining and Cujo and like all these cool movies,
right,
and the symbolism within them and what they really meant.
Uh-huh.
And then he was friends with Stephen King and he'd be like, you know, this is what the movie means, right? And Stephen King's like, not at all.
No, but buddy, I wrote some words and it was scary.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I was really high. I don't remember writing Cujo.
Well, I mean, it's like, that's it with everything. Like, I'm annoyed whenever anybody, and this happens a lot, like, will write a song, you know, and the song is cool or whatever. It's a great song.
Yeah.
And then they try to tell you like, yeah, this song's trying to convey this. I was like, shut up. That song's a hit and you're making up why it's a hit. You don't know why it's a hit. It just is a hit.
It's just good.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he would be like, yeah, this milk truck that spills over, that represents like motherhood, right? Stephen King's like, no, that's a milk truck. it spilled over so that the main character could get stuck in the road there. Like,
Stephen King sounds like a fucking, like, I've read a little bit about him. Sounds awesome. Seems like a very cool guy.
His book On Writing, have you read that?
My girlfriend's reading it right now, and she's like, this is insane.
It's amazing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's
good. I'll read it after. Okay, so you're up there. Mm-hmm. You kind of realize I don't need to be here for what I want to do.
And I had like a weird thing. My roommate, I was like kind of dating this girl, and then my roommate started sleeping with her, and I felt betrayed. And then
that's never fun.
Bad heartbreak situation. Yeah. So I did this internship in New York where I just basically it was an internship with Nick News on Nickelodeon.
Oh, dude, incredible!
With Linda Ellerbe,
everything you'd ever wanted as a kid. It now was you're working at it.
Yeah, I mean it was cool. I got to hang out in New York and learn the editing booths.
I mean that's right. Is that in Times Square?
It was in the West Village, maybe somewhere MTV. Like that.
I'm like in my head, you're at TRL in the background.
No, but I was like so happy to be in New York City.
Yeah, it's the coolest.
It was so fun. And I was just a kid and I was like just by myself. I had a bike and I would just be like, this city is amazing.
It's very fun.
Just go past the Comedy Cellar and just like look at it.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's a real place, you know? And Louie, that show was coming out like the first season and I was just obsessed with that show.
Yeah.
And I could just like walk around and be like, oh, this is where that show is.
That's where he got the pizza and he walks into here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I snuck into a Simon and Garfunkel tribute concert in Central Park.
And
I met Paul Simon.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just a kid like with a longboard. You can just kind of enter places when you're a kid.
If you're dumb enough, you can really get into places.
You can go anywhere.
Yeah.
And then like you could just walk, you'd be like, hey, can I use that porta potty? And the guy's like, sure. And then you just walk into the concert.
Yeah.
And it just, yeah. I was just doing that kind of stuff.
That's still fun.
Yeah, it was great.
You're doing open mics. Did you meet anybody you're still friends with?
I met Grant Cotter at a open mic at the Comic Strip.
Insane. I started comedy with Grant in when I moved to Huntington Beach, he was the only guy I knew who lived in Huntington Beach.
Oh, cool.
So I've known Grant since 2009. He's great. He's done this podcast. He's the best.
Yeah, he's the man. I mean, he was, in my mind, like the most successful comedian in the world. Because I think I saw his Facebook and I was like, oh, you're like Grant doing stuff in LA.
He hustles hard. That dude hustles.
Yeah, yeah. And he's so funny. I mean, we hit it off there and then I didn't see him for like 5 or 6 years.
Right.
But then I was like,
it's fun
what's
when
up,
you run
dude?
Back into him. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's get to how you ended up out here.
Yeah, so then I went to Temple University.
Ooh, you glad your boy's out?
No. If I had graduated college, Cosby would have spoken at my graduation.
Ugh.
Like I would have been sent into the world with like, wow, this amazing comedian sending me into the world.
I was in Montana and I was doing a joke with our friend Cornell Reed, I want to make free Cosby jail Britney shirts. Just the worst, most awful shirt you could possibly be. I was like, this is the worst take possible.
Yeah. I mean, you could wear that in North Carolina.
Oh, fuck. No, I don't even. Places. I don't even. It was just, it was a car riff that we laughed about, and I probably shouldn't have said into a microphone.
And my laugh was fake,
I want to say.
Okay. I didn't find it funny.
So you go to Temple. You're back in Philly.
Yeah, and I was going to film school, like proper film school.
Okay.
So I was like learning more about filmmaking, doing a few open mics in Philly, which that was pretty fun,
back
I will
to fun?
Say.
Did New York make you like be like, fuck, a little bit? Or you're just like, I have more work to do?
I remember thinking like, okay, I suck at comedy. Now I know that. So, but I still love it. So I'm going to
get better.
Going to get better. Yeah. Yep. And then in Philly, like I was doing that Helium mic that was amazing. But then I was doing other like shitty bar open mics and would bomb. So I had friends now who were comedians in Philly, like John McKeever and Tommy Pope and these guys who like kind of took me under their wing. Like they were older than me, but they liked
hey,
me.
You're doing it, take this serious. You seem to want to make a career out of it.
Yeah. They just thought I was funny and that I like had balls to do it. So they were very supportive throughout the years, still friends with those guys.
Dope.
And yeah. So then I went to LA. My whole plan.
So you did not graduate Temple?
No. My whole plan was I did a semester in Philly. And then I did a film program semester in LA where I like did an internship and then I stayed here. I just dropped out because I got an internship at Absolutely Productions, which is Tim and Eric's company.
I have a show with them right now.
Oh, cool. Great. Well, then you know how like
dope and incredible,
amazing
and
of a place
awesome.
That is.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I just like lucked out. Started.
I mean, it's the coolest fucking production company in LA as far as I'm concerned.
It was because I was doing an internship also at Paramount, working on a couple pilots. And I remember being on that lot and it was like so fancy.
Yeah.
And my shoes were like fucked up from like skateboarding and from paint getting on them from like, because when you're an intern at Absolutely Productions, you're helping art department.
You're also working in like a cool, almost like a Brooklyn-esque little warehouse area.
It was,
was this before that?
This was way back. This was right before, I worked on Tim and Eric's $1 billion movie.
Okay.
And before that, they had just done their show, and John Benjamin Has a Van. Like, they had just done...
Okay, so
They were just building...
They didn't have the Burbank loft yet.
No, okay. And that's, like, an amazing, cool place.
I like being in there so much.
Yeah. This was a cool place, too, but it was tiny. It was actually, like, a photography studio that they shot Awesome Show in.
Yeah.
And they, like... When we were filming stuff down in the studio, the offices were upstairs... And nobody could move because the sound of people walking upstairs was so loud. Like, it was that small of an office where, while we were filming, nobody could move. So it was, it was cool. It was small and punk rock.
Yeah,
and
they're
like,
making an awesome show and you respect them. They're cool comics.
Yeah. It was,
John
a dream.
John Benjamin is like one of my favorite people in the world.
Yeah, I didn't work on his show. I didn't get to know him, but I worked on Tim and Eric's movie, which shot out in Palm Springs, and I was suddenly like working on a movie in Palm Springs in this abandoned mall, and
with
just
two cool with like the like guys with dope comedy cred. Not working on some dumb movie.
It was a cool movie, and like Zach Galifianakis and Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly and like all these people were just there.
How'd you get the gig at APSO?
Well, they went to Temple. So okay. I had a professor who was their professor who got me that internship. I interviewed for it.
Right.
But
that's awesome.
It was cool. It was, and I realized like I could probably turn this into production work. So I just dropped out of college and stayed here.
Incredible.
And that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah. And Tim is like one of my, I look up to Tim so much. Eric's great. I don't know Eric nearly as well. They make cool shit. So that's a cool first gig. So now you're working for ABSO and doing stand up out here?
I was doing stand up when I wasn't doing productions, cuz like production work would take my entire life away. Mm-hmm. And stand up was like I was only doing open mics, so I couldn't do that. So I would go through it. I would work on his show until it wrapped, and then I would have a few months off and I would just focus on open micing until my next gig.
And then
basically,
what happened, because like you've done a lot of like, I mean, two late show spots. Have you done a half hour?
No.
And they don't really do them anymore.
No, I was apparently, I heard, supposed to do it before COVID. So
yeah, well, you should have. I would have not been surprised if you had done it because you're very funny. But what I'm saying is you are a successful comic now. When did it start like teetering over open mics into you're like, hey, I'm getting like, I'm going to get to do Seth Meyers or Colbert?
That was, there was a real moment actually, because I started working in production and I was working as like a production assistant, which is like the entry level job, which doesn't pay well and it's really demanding, but you're just kind of like doing it so that you can prove yourself.
Yep.
And then I started working as a associate producer, and I did that for a while on
what shows?
On Comedy Bang Bang. I worked on that show for a while. Okay. And I was working on I worked on Nathan For You, and for I worked on the Eric Andre show for like here and there, you know.
Quick question. Nathan For You is one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah.
What was it like to work on that show?
It was pretty chaotic. Like
here's what I've heard.
Yeah.
And then you can tell me if I'm right or not, from people who worked on it. It was hard for some people to work on it because Nathan goes so far with people.
Yeah.
Like, to where it's very uncomfortable to be like, fuck. Like, okay. Like, I mean, like, it's the best show in the world to me, but like, because I'm like, oh my God, he's not stopping.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you like working on it?
I will say, like, I don't know. I don't want to say this on a podcast, okay. Really, well, honestly, because...
Look, you don't have to at all. We'll just move forward. It's yeah. a fucking amazing show that I heard was a tough show to make.
Really tough show. Like, it felt like a lot of times we were pushing it too far, I will say.
That's what everyone who's worked on it said they felt like.
Yeah.
And it, look, made for a fucking wacko show, and I love it. But, yeah, a lot of times I'm like, dude, bail. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that being said, man, one of the funniest shows ever for me.
I mean, the point is I was getting tons of production experience, like yeah. working on cool shit and working on like low budget comedy where I, you know, had more of an input than I would have working on big stuff. So yeah. I was really like, you know, a vital piece of these TV shows that I was working on, which was cool.
Cool shows too.
Yeah. Yeah. And Comedy Bang Bang was, I worked on that show for like 3 seasons.
I mean, that's just consistently you meet great comics every day.
Yeah. Yeah. But I was doing locations, which was my job. Was
you were
like
not in the studio.
I was in the studio, but I was mostly like with no money figuring out where to film this TV show, like for the sketches.
Yeah.
So it was a very challenging job. I enjoyed it, but I was like, my office was next to the writer's room and I could just hear them having the best time.
Dude,
and just fucking around.
I had that. I shared an office at SNL with Tim Robinson and Zach Cannon, who make yeah. I Think You Should Leave. And we are in the same office and I'm grinding on some fucking thing and they're scream laughing at the funniest sketch I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And I am just like, God damn it.
Like, yeah.
It's just hearing people doing great work next to you is so just like, fuck.
Yeah.
I want to be in that.
Yeah. I mean, I was just, my job too was like so show business, like not the good part of show business,
right.
But like where I'm like, all right, I got to figure out how to get this guy who owns this warehouse to let us film there for this price. And I'm like, all right, if I can buy him a carton of cigarettes and I can like talk to him about his band for a while.
Yeah.
I bet I can get him to bring the price down
and
for filming at houses, like I would walk around these streets and just put letters in mailboxes that were like, hi, I work on a TV show. We want to film in a house for this much money. And the people that would answer were people that had no idea what they should be getting paid
right.
to film in a house. And we would, you know, that was my job, was like hustling
yeah.
to make the budget work.
Okay. So mine was not as bad because I was at least writing next to them, just not funny stuff.
No, but I mean, I get what you mean. And it was just like, in my perspective, I was like, fuck, I'm a comic. I dropped out of school to become a comedian.
Yeah.
But I'm wheeling and dealing.
I'm one wall away from comedy,
yeah.
but I'm so far away from comedy and what
yeah.
I'm doing.
And I would like go to open mics and then I would like feel funny and be like, okay, I'm not like an idiot.
And then also what's tough in that position is the writers see you not as a comic.
Yeah. Like none of the creatives
right.
saw me as a
comic. See you as a comic, which is difficult because
yeah.
you're like, you don't want to be a pushing, be like, dude, I do comedy. They're like, sure you do, you know? And it's a really tough spot.
It really, yeah. And you kind of are forever that way. I mean, I would say probably Scott Aukerman knows I'm a legitimate comedian at this point, but I definitely felt like paranoid that, oh, they're just forever going to think of me as a guy who is a producer type.
Yeah.
And I eventually hit a wall with it where I started becoming a co-producer, which is like a very legitimate title. The money was like getting good. And I was like, okay, getting offered basically jobs that would have paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I had this like moment of, I need to turn these jobs down or else I'm just going to do this forever.
Yeah, it's because you get to a point where I can't not do this.
Yeah.
I have to stop now or I will never stop.
Yeah. And I'll never get good at stand up because these jobs take your, not just your time, but your energy.
Yeah.
Like they're really intense jobs. So I just turned down like 5 jobs that I was like, in my mind, if there are comedy gods, they'll respect that I'm doing this.
Cause
this, is really painful to do, but I need to turn down these jobs so that I can just focus on stand up and do open mics. And just, I got work like delivering pizza and working for Postmates and, you know, feeling like a huge loser. But I had that in the back of my head. Like, I need to,
this is what it takes.
This is what the real thing is. Yeah. It's like, you know, you can't get a degree and then become a comedian, or you can't like use this like ladder of production to become like a comedian. Right. You need to use your heart and your soul and like suffer for it. And that was what I thought. Whether that's true or not, that really did bring me into becoming a comedian.
It's whatever you need it to be. I was a biomedical engineer for 4 years.
Oh wow.
But barely checked in at that job. And it was only a way to get to LA.
Right.
So I was like, I'm a comedian who moonlights as a biomedical engineer. And I was fired, and it was being demoted the day I got SNL from my other thing. So it was like,
oh wow.
But I'm saying, like, I agree that I was like, I'm not really an engineer.
Yeah.
This is just bullshit until I can get my, but it was scary. Anytime they would be like, yo, we want to give you more responsibility. I'm like, fuck, I don't want more. This is not my career.
Yeah. I mean, the scary part was I was getting less responsibility. I was starting to get into the producer role where you're doing less and you're making more.
Ooh.
And you're like, holy shit, these are actually like cool Hollywood jobs. Mm-hmm. But you're still a slave to the show. I mean, there's no way around it.
Right.
You're still a slave to the creative. So I just like, yeah, I stopped doing that and started.
I mean, that's a jump too, because it's not like I had like the easiest transition that
to
a comedian
SNL
could ever hope for. Day job and then literally TV job, like within,
right,
in the same day. So like the fact that you did this without like, hey, you're going to be making the same amount of money in comedy is like way more. I respect.
I mean, I still like this past year during COVID, when I couldn't do comedy and I was like super depressed.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, fuck, I should have stayed in production.
I felt that way about engineering. I was like, I should be a biomedical engineer, man. Yeah.
Ugh, I'm like, God, I have to live on these nest eggs.
Yeah.
Like, you just make a little money doing a creative job, mm-hmm, and then you have to live on it for you don't know how long.
Right.
And it can be torture.
Yeah, because like in my head, you know, stand-up comedy was always just like how I will make rent. You know, I was like, rent to stand up, mm-hmm, and then all the other stuff is writing and acting, and that's great.
Right.
And then they took my rent away. I go, oh my God. Yeah. I didn't know that was possible.
Yeah. Dude.
Yeah, it was rough, but hey, whatever. It's over. We beat it. We won.
We got through.
No one died. Okay. So you do that. You demote yourself.
Yeah.
You start delivering, but now you're like, comedy has to work, I bet.
Comedy has to work. And I was like, yeah, I started when I was fasting for Ramadan. I started writing these basically journal entries on Facebook called Ahmed's Ramadan Diary,
uh-huh,
where I was just really hungry and I was kind of stream of consciousness writing comedy stuff or sincere stuff or whatever that day was. And that ended up turning into like a web series at Comedy Central. So that was,
so that got hundreds of views.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, my manager still like, we should send that out, like, you know, as part of my like packet or whatever.
Jesus.
And I'm like, no, I don't think anyone,
dude,
the numbers are low.
I made this show for, not to cut you off, but it's just,
no,
this is
good,
just how little views Comedy Central digital content gets. Mm-hmm. We had a show, I really liked it, called Laughs in Translation. We made it through, Lorne Michaels' other, company, that their digital company, and, had like a few million views on YouTube. I was really proud of it. Comedy Central bought it, moved it over their network. Now it looks like it has like 80 views. I'm like, you fucking, it looks terrible now.
They took it. And
they took it. And then they deleted the fact that it was legitimate. I was like, God, what? And
did
I didn't even know.
Did they pay you, though, to take it?
They didn't pay me shit. I like called the person who created it. I go, do you know this? She goes, what? All right, sorry. That's just my own tangent with my own beef with Comedy Central digital content. All right.
Yeah.
But that being said, when you're creating it for them, you're like, I'm working for Comedy Central. This rocks. This is the goal.
It was cool because they let me write, edit, direct, and star. in my own thing that was like going to be on Comedy Central, whatever. And what it was actually for Snapchat. That was like what they were making content for. So we had to shoot it. The framing, we had to keep in mind that a lot of people are going to watch it on their vertical phones.
Fuck.
So I had to make sure every shot had to work vertically as well as horizontally. Yep. But the cool part was that they, I felt like whatever, the universe was responding to my leap because I was now a creative professional, even though I wasn't making a lot of money.
Yeah, but it's for Comedy Central, man, and that's like who we grew up watching. Like,
exactly.
Like, I mean, I, as much beef as I have with them, it's still like the network of why I do comedy, you know, and it's very fun anytime I'm on it.
Yeah, no, it's a, I mean, it was a dream.
Yeah.
And it was like my first thing I could be like, I can hang my hat on that.
Yeah.
Like I'm a comedian.
And you're proud of it. You wrote it. It's all, it's you, it's your thing. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I got to make it like, it's not like the Comedy Central audience on YouTube doesn't love it, which is fine because it's not like,
dude, they only love fucking like Ari's stand-up show where we all have to talk about how we're pieces of shit.
Right.
I forget what that show is even called.
This is not happening.
Yeah, this is not happening. It's by far my most watched stand-up clip, and I'm like, this is my least favorite thing I've done on TV.
Yeah, the Comedy Central YouTube audience is just brutal. They, and God forbid you're a woman. Like, they will destroy you. It's,
right.
I've just seen it over and over where I'm like, these are like, this is like QAnon or something. Like, who are these people?
Fuck. Okay, so you are, that happens. You're feeling good about yourself. And then how do you get your first late night set?
I got, well, I had management at that point. Mm-hmm. And then once you have like a manager, you can submit, you know, a tape to do late night.
Yeah.
So I said, they sent a tape out to every show and then Seth Meyers, like they liked it. And that was an amazing experience because they didn't give me a single note.
No, he's the best, man. He's like one of my buds.
Oh, nice.
I opened for him when he was getting ready for his special.
Yeah.
And he's like by far the coolest fucking dude ever.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was like, yo, can I come on your show? And he was like, do you want to do panel or stand up?
That's crazy.
Like, I'm going to do stand up. And he's like, all right. And then I got there, didn't ask a question. And they were like 5 minutes ago, can I go long? And they were like, yeah.
It's insane.
It's the best.
I was like, I gave a 10-minute clip and they were like, yes. And I was what? So which parts of it do you like? They're like, whichever.
Dude, so Mike Shoemaker is the producer of that and Seth. And they're like, they're so fucking cool because they're like, we book comedians who are funny. Who are we to tell them how to be funny if
it's insane.
Got funny enough to where you get to be on TV? Do what you do.
Yeah.
You got here by doing what you did. You didn't get here because someone pieced it together for you.
Right,
they
right.
They fucking rock. I am just like so stoked. I just love that show so much.
Oh, it couldn't have been a better experience. I went to New York. I did spots for a week. I just honed out the set.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went and I did it. And it's like such a small studio that it feels like you're just doing a show.
Dude,
it was crazy.
Yeah, I had a bad, I did not enjoy my set on Conan. And I was like, I'm never going to do another late night set.
Yeah.
I just didn't have fun. It wasn't anybody's fault but my own. It just felt like a cold room.
Uh-huh.
And then I took like 4 or 5 years. And then I was like, you know what? Let's try stand up on late night again, but let's do it on Seth. Changed my whole point of view on how late night sets
can Wow. be. Yeah, I never did Conan, but I've seen some rough sets, and I did Colbert, which I've seen some people struggle on too, and I was like, oh, this is like, you know, a big theater.
Yeah,
it's like the Ed Sullivan Theater. You're like, I don't know, like maybe it's not a good room for stand up. And it was a way different experience. I mean, that was a notes process.
Yep.
Tweaking the jokes like word by word, figuring out the exact set. And then it was Stephen Colbert wasn't at the taping.
No, because don't they tape like a couple of comics in a row?
They taped like 5 stand-ups. So it was just taping a bunch of stand-ups.
That's like kind of, I mean, it really takes away like how much fun this doing Seth is because
mm-hmm.
it's a show and you go up at the end of the show
mm-hmm.
and you're there and it's live and it fucking rules.
Yeah.
And with the Colbert, it's like, it's a showcase they tape and it just doesn't feel as fun.
I will say though, I did enjoy it because it was like,
you had other comics?
Byron Bowers was there with Incredible. Me. Like we were just, it felt like we were just doing a really cool show.
That's dope.
So it was like, there was a host.
Probably less pressure.
Yeah. That's what I felt. I'm like, I don't have to follow a panel.
Yeah.
I'm following another stand up and the audience is just watching stand up.
Yeah.
So it was great in a way where it's like, I know how to do stand up on a show.
Yeah.
This is just a show.
Mm-hmm.
It just keeps rolling. You know, they stop between comics to reset the mic.
Yeah.
And whatever. But
that's dope.
It was cool. Yeah. So
I mean, yeah, and it's also, you know, that's the, you know, the Tonight Show pretty much. Or
yeah.
It's great.
It's yeah.
It's fun to do a couple different ones. It's great. And then I'm done with them now.
Done. You're done.
There is so much pressure. It's, you know how hard it is to be funny in 5 minutes? You do.
Yeah, it is. It is insane, and it doesn't feel natural. It's like
not natural.
It's doing a different thing. It's a different muscle. Mm-hmm. It's like you learn how to be funny, and then you have to learn how to do that.
Yeah,
which is like how to be concise and funny.
Right. And okay, yeah. So you're doing all this. What? And then we'll scoot out of here. Did you have like a moment where you realized I made the right decision in stopping production, and, you know, pre-COVID, of course, as we all had those thoughts, but like, was there like a thing that happened? Was it Seth or Colbert that you were like, okay, comedy was the right choice. This is going to work out.
Yeah. I mean, stuff that now in hindsight didn't work out, but there were moments where I was like, oh, I have like a thing that I'm pitching, and I'm really proud of this thing that I made, and I'm a creative, I'm a director.
But was
I'm
there like a day that you were like, you know, like, fuck yeah?
I don't know. That's a good question. I remember like Sarah Silverman like randomly found those Ahmed's Ramadan diary.
Comedy Central stuff?
No, the Facebook entries.
Oh, wow.
Before it was a Comedy Central thing, like she had just, someone retweeted something of mine, and then she was up late. She was like on the road somewhere and just happened upon my Twitter and then read my Ramadan diaries. And like, I just remember being in the car heading down from Sketchfest from San Francisco and just being like, oh, Sarah Silverman followed me and like liked a bunch of my tweets.
Oh, that's cool.
And I like reached out to her and I was like, hey, and she was like, hey, you're funny. And then like, that was the beginning of being like, oh, cool. Like, I guess I'm a comedian. Like, I feel, you know, when you feel respected by other comedians that you love, that's when it really changes. And you're like, oh, I feel like, validated by that, and that all of this was worth it because a cool person like thinks I'm funny.
Yeah, I mean, that's in reality, whenever we're doing a late night set, we're really doing it to 25 people. Like, you know, like I only care what 25 people think about this. You know what I mean? And if they like it, great. Like, and it's like Sarah Silverman is one of those people. You know, like I want people I respect to like what I'm doing because that translates, and that's what you got. That's dope.
Yeah.
That's like, it's also
surreal.
Like those small things, but like the first like small thing, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Sarah Silverman. Like, I mean, that's also just rad. Shows like what type of person she is that she, you know, like a lot of like bigger comics will be like, that's funny, but I'm not going to validate this person.
Right. Yeah. She was just like an open person. Like,
that's dope.
She was just like, hey, I like you. Like, let's be friends. You know,
that's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've had a few moments like that, but that was, I remember like the first of those.
That's awesome.
Like,
that's what I was looking for. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else you want to promote? What are you jamming on right now? Anything?
I have
to put you on the spot.
I have some tour dates, I guess.
Oh yeah. Well, let's get them out.
Let's
there.
Do it, dude.
I don't know when this comes out. I'm headed on the road, tomorrow. So,
I'm at Indianapolis Helium, August 6th and 7th.
Indianapolis Helium.
And then I'm at St. Louis Helium on September 10th and 11th. So
St. Louis Helium. This podcast is sponsored by the Helium Comedy Clubs. We have talked about three of them. Big fan.
Yeah, great clubs.
Tremendous. Love it. The St. Louis one is below a Webster Grill restaurant.
Oh, they're all so... Comedy clubs are so weird.
Yeah.
It's never a normal experience.
No.
Yeah.
Except for, like, good nights. Like
yeah.
That, like, standalone in, like, you know, and Vermont Comedy Club.
And Vermont Comedy. Well, I did a show before Good Nights. I'll say this really quick. I did a show in Fayetteville.
Okay.
Which is outside of Raleigh. It's like, they call it Fayette-Nam. And it was like a military town. Like, there's like Confederate flags as you drive in.
Oh.
And it was like, oh, this is what the road is for so many comics, you know, when you're not at the clubs. It's like, you go to these weird places, you perform at an Irish bar in the middle of a military town, and you feel like you might get shot if you say the wrong joke, or like,
yeah,
if you're offensive or, you know. I mean,
oh, yeah. My biggest problem is, like, I'll do the club and then I'll, like, hey, let's go do the open mic across town. And I'll ruin all the good feelings I had.
Yeah.
Because I'll just go fucking eat it.
Yeah.
Like, what am I doing? I was in the perfect room for comedy, and now I'm arguing over the Olympics while they're on.
Yeah, but that's, like, because you love comedy.
Yeah, I know. All right, Ahmed, I know that you're a huge fan of this podcast. You're always listening.
Yeah.
You're always texting.
Mm-hmm.
Great job.
Writing
no
in.
So you know, because you listen to them all a couple times, you said.
Yeah.
You obviously are aware that I always have our guest take us out for the episode.
Oh, yeah. Great. So thank you guys for tuning in. I'm a huge fan of the podcast, and so are you. And if you've made it this far, come see me on the road, because you just need to go a little further.